The Journey Into podcast is proud to present This Journey Into a Long Time Ago in a Galaxy Far, Far Away. A journey into Star Wars. Come join us as Marshall Latham and Rish Outfield discuss all things Star Wars amid several delusions of grandeur. Hey there, welcome to another episode of the Star Wars Delusions of Grandeur here on the Journey Into podcast. We have once again assembled a four-person team of Inquisitors and Enlighteners for the show. First of all, as always, we have Rish Outfield of the Dune Steve Audio Fiction Magazine.
Marshall Latham, only you could be so bold.
And we also have Big Anklevich from the Dune Steve Audio Fiction Magazine.
Now, is Inquisitors and Enlighteners the thing I should know about? What is that?
It's you got to get deeper into the Force before you can understand.
Yeah?
The Inquisitors work with the Sith. No, I don't know. I'm just making, well, that's true, but I don't know about Enlighteners. So.
All right. Well, I guess I'll try to be an Enlightener then, because Sith are bad.
Okay.
And we also have Renee Chambliss back with us here today.
Hello. 2 weeks in a row, that's got to be some kind of a record.
That's pretty good. We talked so much last week about Rogue One and other things. But we did want to talk about Carrie Fisher and her impact, not only on Star Wars, but just her life and entertainment and all the things that she's been involved with. But I can't resist. We're seldom a timely podcast. We typically talk about things months after everybody else does. And so today, on the day of recording, they've just announced the new title for Star Wars Episode 8. And so I wanted to get your guys' reaction to it. So the title, as you probably already know, is The Last Jedi.
Da-da-da-da.
So what do you guys think about that?
Well, last week, Big said the title was going to be The Sith Reborn. Is that right?
I don't remember. Yeah, I stumbled my way through it, right? That was on the show that I said that, wasn't it?
It was. And I'm wondering, is Last Jedi better than Sith Reborn? What do you think?
Oh, it's better than, yeah, Sith Reborn. I mean, anything's better than Sith. How many ellipses do they need in that title to make it work? But yeah, I don't know. It's not bad. I mean, it's not The Attack of the Clones. So I don't know. I mean, I haven't seen the films, so I can't say how well it fits. I don't know that any of them are particularly super made to fit what's going on necessarily, but...
Well, The Empire Strikes Back certainly does.
Yeah, that one's pretty good.
But The Force Awakens, is it awakening in Rey? Is that what we're to understand from that? Is it just has the Force been napping? And then when she touches that lightsaber, it wakes? Is that?
I think that's what we were supposed to.
I think it awakened in Rey is probably the thing. I don't know.
Well, and bringing them all together, bringing BB-8 to her and all of that. That could be part of it.
Okay, so Force Awakens fits.
When you guys are writing, this is sort of a tangent, but it's also related. Do you have an easy time coming up with titles or a difficult time?
I have a terrible time coming up with titles unless I have the title before I even start. Like sometimes a title will just suggest itself to me before I ever even write like the first word. But if I haven't got a title, like, kind of picked out before I'm started, then, yeah, I might as well not bother. So I have lots of crappy titles for things, like The Wrong Ingredients, et cetera, et cetera. Ones like that that's just, they're just not, they don't, like, make you think, ooh, I want to read that. I don't know if the ones that I have that do work make you want to read it or not, but, you know, in other cases, like I have a story called Do Over that hopefully we're going to do on the show here not too long from now. That title I had before I ever started, and I always you know, that was always the title, and I think it's a good title. But yeah, I don't know. I'm terrible with titles generally. Like, Rish will sit down. What do you do? Like, make lists of titles and stuff like that sometimes? And then just like, which one's the best? You did that with your Birth of a Sidekick sequel, where you even put it up for a vote for the people on Facebook once you had like 5 titles. But I think you sent me a list of like 20 of them or more.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. Like you, sometimes I'll have a title while I'm writing. And that's easy. Yeah, it comes to me right at the start or comes to me halfway through. But if I make it to the end of the story and I don't know what it's called, then I'm in trouble. And that's when I have to resort to things like, okay, here's 8 titles, none of which I'm really thrilled of. Do you like any of these? And I don't know, when it comes to Star Wars titles, where these titles came from. I remember seeing George Lucas typing out Star Wars Episode 1, The Beginning. That was his title. And I don't know where Phantom Menace came from, but these things, there are people that agonize over them, and then there are other people, they just, yeah, it's not that big a deal.
Well, I guess I sort of feel both ways. In some ways, I think, oh, it's not that big of a deal because, like, Star Wars A New Hope, you know, is that what got people to go see it? Probably not. So I don't know how important they are, except for it just gives us something to call the story or the movie or whatever. But as when I'm, and you guys write way more than I do and put out much more than I do, but when I have had to title something, it's taken a lot of thought and it has not been something quick. And I usually like the titles to have more than one meaning. So the title can be sort of looked at in different ways. So I think titles are important, but I don't know that they need to be important, if that makes sense. Anyway.
So, Renee, what did you think of this title of The Last
Jedi?
Well,
the first thing, I was surprised by it. I mean, I don't think it's a bad title, but it surprised me because it sounds so final, you know? Like, The Last Jedi, you know, it makes, at first sort of hearing it, it makes you think this is it. This is the last movie, which I don't think is the plan. I mean, you guys are more up on.
Yeah, no, there's at least Episode 9 coming after this. So.
Right. And on top of this, you have 2 Jedis at once in this show. You've got Luke and, I assume, Rey.
To me, I think it means that it's going to be Luke's show. Luke's going to be the primary character because, you know, at this point in time, before Rey awakened, he was the last Jedi.
And she's not a Jedi. You're not a Jedi yet.
So I think that might be telling us who's going to be the focus of, well, maybe not the focus, but similar to the way Han Solo was the main character from the original cast, and he interacted with all the different new people.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's signaling that that'll be the case, or the role for Mark Hamill in this one.
But no, it didn't bother me. I mean, it just didn't sound like a part 2. But yeah.
It sounds like the final chapter.
To me, yeah.
Unfortunately, one of the first things I thought of was the movie The Last Samurai.
Oh, somebody on Facebook said The Last Unicorn.
Oh, yeah, I didn't think of that one.
I think it's fine. I don't know that a title makes or breaks a movie. Like, Revenge of the Sith is a great title, but I don't like that movie. And yeah, The Last Jedi might be fine. Let's let the movie decide. What do you think of the title, Marshall?
Yeah, I was surprised by it too, but yeah, I think it's sufficient to, it's evocative enough to make me want to see it, I guess. It's better, I think, than The Force Awakens. When The Force Awakens was announced, I was kind of like, meh, okay. Not that I wasn't excited to see it, but it didn't make me more excited just because it was called The Force Awakens. But this is a little bit more intriguing than that, I think.
Do you think there's a Star Wars title that could actually make you more excited to watch it?
Yoda Returns.
Well, if it was called The Sojourn of Snoke, that would get me really excited.
Ewoks and more Ewoks.
Sojourn. The Ewok Adventure is the only one that got you excited and nothing else.
No.
Not even Battle for Planet Endor was enough.
Jar Jar Binks, the real story.
Also, yeah, I guess we'll see how the movie resonates with that title when we get to see it later this year.
I imagine we'll get a trailer within the next 2 or 3 months. I mean, it's so soon that, this is the only time we will have to talk about the title. The rest of the time was, oh, well, let's talk about the first teaser. Oh, hey, let's talk about who Laura Dern is playing. You know,
the title that would make you really want to see it is The Christmas Special 2.
Star Wars the Musical. I can think of lots of not serious titles, but.
I wonder how long till they do the Broadway musical version like they did with Lion King and everything else, Beauty and the Beast.
Yeah, I guess I shouldn't laugh. It's definitely possible, huh?
It is Disney, after all. They've got Alan Menken figuring out the songs for it now.
I would go see that. No. I would be just as excited for Star Wars the Musical as The Last Jedi.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, that's why I don't... Even though I like titles and I like titles to be meaningful and to fit the whatever it is, I don't think it really matters in this case because, you know, we're all going to go see it regardless of what it's called.
We all went and saw The Attack of the
Clones.
Exactly.
We'll
say anything.
We did. Well, maybe if it was called Furbacca, maybe I'd want to go see that.
Is that what that toy was that I kept bugging you with in that one show? Is that what it was called?
Yeah, that's what it was called.
How do you not remember that? How does Marshall remember?
Furbacca was what it was
he
called?
He didn't even want it. Yes, it was a Furby.
Oh, that's right, because it was a Furby. Oh, yes. Gosh, I didn't even get one of those for Christmas, even though I asked 100 times. Oh, that's too bad. Oh. I could right now be saying stuff to him, and he could be saying things back in Wookiee. It'd be so fun.
I even used that as the image for the episode.
Yes, he did. Okay, well, let's bring the fun down a little bit, and we can talk about this this tragic loss that we had. I 2016 was a hard year for celebrity death, but just as far as Star Wars goes, we lost Admiral Ackbar, we lost R2-D2, and we lost Leia at the very end of the year. And I think we easily could have done an episode about Kenny Baker and about R2-D2, but none of them have affected me in the same way that Carrie Fisher's death did. Big texted me after. It sounded like she was out of the woods. Remember, Debbie Reynolds had tweeted that she was stabilized. And then, what was it, the next day? She was gone. And the day after that, Debbie Reynolds was gone.
Yeah.
Which is just...
Yeah, heartbreaking.
Unsettling. Yeah. I guess I'm talking, so I'll go first. Sorry. Princess Leia was my first crush. She was I was a little boy and I saw Star Wars and Jedi. And the boys around me were talking about how there was the metal bikini and that, you know, ooh, Princess Leia. And... Luke Skywalker looks at the hologram and says, who is she? She's beautiful. And something opened up inside me and was like, well, that's what beauty is then. That's, wow.
A blurry blue hologram?
It's to this day, a blurry blue hologram is all I need. And so, yeah, to me, that's kind of, I mean, it's, in a way, it's like, oh, Princess Leia was my first love.
I guess for me, I keep forgetting, Rich, that you saw Return of the Jedi first, where I had seen it with Star Wars first. And, you know, a lot of people talk about how Leia was their first crush. You know, I know Kevin Smith talks a lot about that, too. But for me, it was more, I kind of saw her more as kind of an older sister. And I think that's because my older sister was totally into Star Wars. She was just as much into Star Wars, if not more at that time, than I was. And she was about 3 years older than me at the time. Of course, Carrie Fisher was even older than that. But I kind of put her in that same kind of a frame, is that she was like my older sister. And so, you know, and my older sister had boyfriends and stuff. So it just, you know, when Leia and Han were getting together or whatever, that just kind of made sense to me. That's what older sisters do. And so I've kind of always looked up to her in that way. Never kind of got onto that crush or whatever because you wouldn't think that about your sister. So that's kind of how I've always viewed Princess Leia in that.
Well, I just thought she was such a great character, and I think we haven't had a lot of characters like her. So I've said this before on the Star Wars podcast, but, you know, I was 7 years old when I saw Star Wars, and it just, I mean, what a great, you know, when you're a little kid and you see a movie like that, you want to play, you want to act it out, you want to play Star Wars, and here we have someone easy to be, you know, for a little girl, be Leia, and she just was really, really great and so strong and so dedicated, and just she didn't compromise her principles. And I really think her character stayed consistently that way throughout the series, like even through Force Awakens. You know, she was committed to what was right and to the cause, and like the personal things that would come up that could distract a person, understandably, didn't seem to distract her away from that strength and that commitment.
You know, it's interesting. I'm trying to think if I ever had a crush on Leia, or if I saw her as a big sister or as a role model, or what I saw her as. I don't know. I never sexualized Leia like other people did. I guess I was a late bloomer. Even with the metal bikini, I didn't go. I remember way back in the day, and there were the Return of the Jedi trading cards that me and all my friends would buy and trade. And there was, I don't remember which one it was, but I remember one of the guys that I was hanging out with and playing with and stuff. He's like, hey, look at this. Do you want to see Princess Leia's tush? Look, here it is. And I was just like, tush? Really? That's a word you use, tush? But I wasn't like, oh yeah, show me your tush, come on, yeah, you know, or nothing. I didn't go. I don't know, maybe, cause yeah, I didn't. I was young. Am I younger than you, Marshall? I saw the movies in the same order that Rich saw the movies in. You know, I saw Return of the Jedi first as well. That was when I was finally. I remember wanting to see Empire Strikes Back. And all the kids talking about it when I got back from school, or back to school from summer. And, you know, oh, yeah, and you see that thing on the asteroid that came up and tried to eat the money for that? It was so rad. And I was just like, oh, yeah, I saw that on the commercial. that was rad. But, yeah, I never got to see movies much when I was a kid. If we went and saw movies, it was in the drive-in because you could get everybody in one van for one price. So I didn't see them much, and it wasn't until Return of the Jedi that I actually saw the movies. But, yeah, I don't know if I was younger. I mean, I liked the Ewoks still, so I suppose that means I was younger.
You're younger.
But, yeah, I don't. Maybe I saw her more as a mom than a girlfriend or a sister. I don't know, because she was so, especially in the first two movies, not especially sexualized. I mean, they even did the taping down her chest or something like that. Every time, I'm always surprised, to tell you the truth, when I'll see a picture and I see Carrie Fisher when she was younger and, you know, in the metal bikini or just in the, what, you know, some outfit, I think, wow, that was what Carrie Fisher looked like. She was really hot. How did I not know that? You know, I'm kind of surprised when I see pictures like that.
So you didn't hear the whole thing about the...
the underwear in space?
Right.
No jiggling in space.
Yeah.
I hadn't
No, it was
heard
dangerous,
that, I...
right? Because that's how she said she wanted to go. It's strangled by your own bra.
Well, I got to talk to Warwick Davis in 1999 at the very first Star Wars celebration. And I asked him, I said, well, were you at all intimidated in that scene with you? And it's just you and Princess Leia in the forest and all that. And he said, why would I be in? I don't understand. And I said, because it was Princess Leia. And she was so hot. And you, and he's like, well, I was 11 years old. She wasn't hot to me. And I was just like, but you're older than I am. And I thought she was hot. There were some people that it just didn't occur to. But yeah, that was my definition of of beauty. That was my formation, my, you know, the very bedrock there where, you know, it's like Luke says she's beautiful. And I was like, okay, this is what I'm going to measure people by from now on. I know what beauty is. I sound like Lieutenant Commander Data, who is, you know, like, I am trying to discover what attractiveness is.
I think that was really a common way to view her. You know, there's that whole, I don't know if you guys watched Friends, but there's that whole Friends episode where Ross wants Rachel to dress up sure. in a gold bikini because, and you know, and all the other guys are like, oh yeah, you know, that's sort of the ultimate fantasy.
And then he imagines his mom's head on her at the end.
Right, right.
Of something right, Joey said, and it's ruined forever.
But so, no, I think that's very, very common. And in a way, it's just interesting to hear, like you say, Big, that she wasn't that portrayed that sexually, which is true. Like, she wasn't. That's why the, if you saw them in order, the gold bikini was kind of shocking. I
yeah,
guess this is maybe my perspective, but it was kind of shocking because that's not how she had been. You know, I mean, you have Luke and Han kind of vying for her, you know, both in 4 and 5, but the way that she is portrayed is not sort of as a sex object. You know, I think that's really great. I wish that was like more norm for how women are portrayed and young women are portrayed in movies. But no, she really wasn't.
Well, okay, you just said it in the present tense. You wish that more women are portrayed that way. But in 1977, that had to have stuck out like a sore thumb. Even if you see the promotional material of the outfit they've got Carrie Fisher in to get people to go see this movie,
right.
where it's just tons of cleavage and the dress is slit all the way up.
Yeah.
And stuff. But you don't see that at all
no.
in the film. You know, and you see movies from that era, and especially from like the 50s and 60s, where there is the token girl. And don't take this the wrong way, but they're always so useless,
yeah.
so
no, they
worthless.
Are.
They're there to scream. They're there to be terrified. They're there to faint. They're there to be rescued, or they're there to be attractive. They're there to be mm-hmm. lusted after. And Leia, you know, she, if you watch Empire Strikes Back, she never misses a stormtrooper when she fires her blaster.
Yeah.
Everybody else misses, but Leia doesn't. And she's the military leader, and she's the one whose head is in the game. And all that's important is that we get these plans back and all that stuff. And to me, it's just, you know, I was so young, I didn't know the difference.
Right.
But you see other stuff, you see Logan's Run or something like that from the same era. And yeah, that's not the role of women at all. But for you, Renee, to say it in the present tense, you continually see women being underutilized or being sexualized. Or can you elaborate a little bit more?
I think it definitely is better than it used to be. But I still think there's a long way to go. It seems to be such a part of our culture. This is maybe off topic, but I think it's related. You even talk about like women athletes and like how attractive they are, like the beach volleyball players, like the gymnasts sort of being torn apart for how they look or for not smiling or whatever. Like you just don't have that with men. So I do think things are better. You know, we have, you know, Katniss Everdeen and, you know, we have, you know, Rey in Force Awakens. Like we have female characters who are not sort of portrayed sexually, but we also have a lot that are. So I just wonder, you know, as a little girl watching Star Wars, I just accepted it for what it was. Like I thought it was great. But I wonder, like, it must have been a conscious decision and how they came to that decision and if there was any sort of pushback like from the studio or anything about that. It's really like when you think about it, it's really revolutionary and you wonder, you know, how it happened that way.
Well, I give George Lucas a hard time because of the special editions and the prequels and all that stuff, but it had to originate with him. I mean, if you look at Raiders of the Lost Ark, look at Marion Ravenwood
yeah.
in Raiders.
Yeah.
And that came from George Lucas as well. She is not your typical damsel in distress either. It's
no.
just, it must be something that is important to him mm-hmm. In developing. And you look on the prequels, and Padme Amidala, for the most part, is not sexualized. And she is a military leader, and she mm-hmm. has a brain. And she, yeah, it's, I guess, I'm going to say there's probably all George there.
Yeah, and I think, you know, Princess Leia, you know, that's her title, right? Princess Leia. But even in Star Wars, until the very end, you know, temple ceremony sequence, you never see her as a princess. Mm-hmm. You know, she's, that's just kind of a name. You know, she's talking back to Tarkin and Vader, and she's shooting, like you said, you know, shooting stormtroopers. And when you came in here, didn't you have a plan of getting out and, you know, just yeah. talking about, you know, all these things, you know, and.
Yeah, a lot of the good, you know, will somebody get this walking carpet out of my way? And, you know, just, she yeah. has a lot of, like, the funny lines, too.
Yeah. And then, you know, as soon as they get to Yavin or whatever, she's right in there with the political leaders and you know, planning on things. And you never really see her as a princess until the very end of the first movie.
One thing that, again, I didn't notice this when I was a little girl watching, but have noticed later on, is that scene, you know, after Obi-Wan gets struck down and they're on, you know, they've escaped and they're on the Millennium Falcon together, and she's comforting Luke, who's, you know, because he's sad about Obi-Wan. And I'm thinking, hello, like, her whole planet just blew up, you know, like, you think about all the people that she has just lost, but she's comforting him. And she even says, you know, we have no time for our sorrow. There's no time for our sorrows. You kind of wonder, like, I think she did in some ways pay for that. For that sort of being able to detach herself that way. And actually that, I think, comes out in The Force Awakens.
Well, we saw her once on an episode of Rebels. And Renee, you don't watch Star Wars Rebels, right?
No, I don't. I don't even know what that is, so.
But I'm
sorry.
Wait, you really don't know what that is?
No, I really don't.
Oh, there's an animated series. It's in its third season right now, and it takes place about 10 years before Star Wars. 10 years? 5 years? Before the original Star Wars.
5 or 6 years, yeah.
And James Earl Jones has been on it as Vader. Billy Dee Williams has been on it as Lando.
And it's good?
Frank Oz was on it as Yoda. I think it's great, but...
It's very good, yeah.
But it's made for kids, but often I will get something from it that speaks to me as an adult. And there's one episode with Leia, and she's a senator, a young senator, and she is helping the rebellion under the table. You know, no one can know that she's helping them. And I would love to see more about her when she was young, because you get the impression that she didn't have a childhood. She had to grow up awful quick. And in many ways, she's more mature than Han, even. I mean, way more mature than Luke. And yeah, and so it's only natural mm-hmm. she would comfort Luke, who she seems to view as a little brother at the beginning of Empire. Yeah, there's that kiss and all that stuff, but she's the strong one.
She's,
you know, taken care of. She cares for him. And then at the end, when he's just been beaten, mm-hmm. she comforts Luke again.
I didn't think it was unbelievable at all. I thought it was very believable, but just like kind of ironic. And that, you know, I'm sure like that character Luke didn't even give a second thought to the fact that here she is comforting him, whereas she's also had huge losses recently, which he knows about. He knows Alderaan was blown up. He knows that's her planet. But you know, that I don't think even occurs to him. I thought that was very believable in like a roles that women have a lot of the time. As sort of the comforters and the nurturers, and maybe it not going the other way as much.
So it wasn't the wrong move, like when she just walks right past Chewie and hugs Rey.
Yeah, no, that wasn't good.
It wasn't like that.
Unless we get some explanation there.
She saw somebody that needed comfort, I guess. I don't know. JJ has mentioned that. He regrets that he wishes that he...
Because you would think, like, he would also... That's sort of similar. Like, Rey has... How long has Rey known Han, you know? And how long has Chewie known Han? Like, who's had the bigger loss here?
Exactly.
Leia herself. It's a bigger loss for her than it is for Rey. I always thought we would find out more about that in the next movie.
I mean, I hope we do, too. Yeah, the fact that it's starting right from where the last one left off hopefully means we don't miss anything. And we can find out, as Rey finds out, just what's been going on and who Luke is and who she is. Yeah, it may make sense halfway through The Last Jedi when we find out why Leia would hug this strange girl.
Well, I had an interesting discussion online with a friend of mine that I went to high school with about the whole gold bikini scene. And, you know, he's my age and, you know, had a similar, like what we were talking about before with like the wow that, you know, seeing her like that was so, you know, amazing. And I think we were 13 at the time when that movie came out. So prime time for that. But, and I think there was some arguments that was sort of selling out in a way to have her in a gold bikini, you know, when she hadn't really been portrayed that way before.
This is in 1983 or this is years and years
yes,
later?
Yes, in 1983, okay. And maybe even later. But yeah, back then, similar to the Ewoks, you know, what are they doing? They're just trying to sell more toys, you know, so they're kind of making these story decisions, not just from a pure story standpoint, but also to, you know, sell little stuffed Ewoks or to kind of appeal to guys who like to look at girls in gold bikinis. So anyway, I was saying to him that I thought though, even though, you know, I can totally see the argument for that, I also thought the way she, the character, handled being in that situation was pure Leia, you know, and as a 13-year-old girl watching it, you know, of course, my thought wasn't like, ooh, look how great she looks, although I did think she looked great, but it was more like, I felt a lot of sympathy and empathy for her because I could imagine like what, how awful that would be. You know, here you are like in this outfit that is totally not you,
cuddling,
you know,
up
very
with a
kind
slug.
Of exposed. Exactly. Literally chained to this giant slug, you know, having to watch your friends be sort of toyed with. But she doesn't fall apart. She doesn't freak out. She just bides her time. And then when the time comes, like she's the one who, you know, kills him. So
Leia's pretty kick-ass when she's in the bikini. You know, she doesn't. I mean, it's a kind. You know, there was a Stephen King book. I can't remember which one. It was one of the parts of the Dark Tower trilogy, in which Roland and Eddie are in like the basement of some gangster.
Yes,
and Eddie is. And they get into a gunfight, and during this gunfight, Eddie is buck naked. Okay, and it's one of the things that Roland talks about how Eddie, this guy's something else, because he managed to hold it together and fight in this situation while buck naked, and this is something that would undo even some of the best warriors that there are, and I considered Leia being in kind of a similar situation where, you know, she's somebody who usually has collar all the way up to her chin and sleeves to her wrist. She's like a Quaker or a Mennonite or something most of the time. She's not like that at all. So being put in this situation should be something that should undo her, but she's the one that strangles Jabba to death. She gets on that freaking gun and just starts shooting everybody up. She does well for herself in this situation, which just, you know, shows you that she can do whatever the situation is thrown at her. She's going to kick ass. So, you know, she's a really strong character.
Yeah, and when in telling that story, they kept her consistent. You know, they kept her, which I would say with Padme, I didn't think Padme was kept consistent during the prequels. But Leia was. She really was. She didn't change, you know, even though she had a relationship with Han, you know, even though, you know, she was chained to Jabba in this very vulnerable situation, she still was herself and the character that we had known and grown to know from the earlier movies. So I always appreciated that.
Padme was consistently uninteresting. Consistently had fancy hair.
I was sort of the prequel apologizer, but that was one thing that I did not, I didn't like the, oh, Anakin, what are we going to do? You know, like that was a big change from how she had been.
Well, we didn't see that side of her in those first two prequels. She was way tougher, she had it so much more together than Anakin in those two first movies.
She was pregnant, so she had a lot of hormones going on. It's harder.
That can affect things for sure.
The one person here would know for sure.
Well, I would like to think that I wouldn't turn into a total just like wimpy person who would like loses all my morals basically because I'm just relying on my, I guess.
It's because he made that speech about sand. It was such a sexy thing that from then on he owned her heart.
Yeah, he was very hard to resist. So I guess we have to give her a break, huh?
Yeah, the point I lost all respect for Padme was after Anakin killed all the mm-hmm. people, the sand people, and then she just stuck with him after that. After that, I was like, okay, she has no way to think for herself if she's going to stick this out with.
Yeah, so I mean, what would Leia have done in that similar situation?
Right. But going back to the beginning of Return of the Jedi, I mean, you think about that image, even the poster, you know, that image of her in the metal bikini and with Jabba and everything. I mean, that's a right out of a pulp mm-hmm. magazine or a Conan the Barbarian comic or something like that. And it's, you know, very stereotypical of a fantasy kind of
John Carter of thing. Mars.
But yet, John Carter of Mars, exactly. But like you guys have been saying, her actions defied that stereotype, even though she was dressed. That, you know, that's the mm-hmm. way she was presented physically. But her actions were different than that and pretty consistent all the way through.
Yeah, the whole deal with the first poster where she's got the same white dress on, but now it plunges all the way down in the front and the slit on the skirt, it goes all the way up. That's very, I would say, even much more the typical sci-fi book cover. Mm-hmm. Which is funny because most of the sci-fi books that they would do covers like that for weren't like ultra sexy anyways. You know, they're just like Isaac Asimov talking about like robots and their three rules and, you know. Oh, and now is he obeying the three rules? How did he obey the three rules? Let's work this out. Let's three scientists sit here and talk. You know that.
Oh, I'm sorry. I dozed off for a second.
That's the kind of books that often had covers like that. So I guess it kind of fits, you know, with the fact that they made her all uber sexy on the cover. And then you open the movie up and watch it and you're like, oh, wait, she had her boobs taped down so they were flatter. What the hell? You know?
Well, I think we would not know these stories if it weren't for Carrie Fisher herself. She had this hilarious way, a self-deprecating way of talking about herself, about Princess Leia, about the movies, about her own attractiveness. And, you know, I remember her saying, you know, they showed her the bikini and she's just like, where's the rest of it? And she's like, wait, how much weight am I going to have to lose before they say, oh, well, wait, we could just get Amy Irving to play this part. And I mean, she was really, really funny. And then later in life, Carrie was brought in to punch up scripts and to write dialogue and to do all sorts of stuff. I mean, she had a, what do they call that? A second act in her career as a writer, which I think is kind of amazing. But it was really fun whenever you'd hear her talk about that or to talk about her kickstarting a million boys' puberty in Return of the Jedi and stuff like that. Just a sort of a tongue-in-cheek way of looking back at these movies and sort of making fun of them, but not on the scale of ever alienating any of us fanboys, the geeks that just, you know, worshipped those movies and worshipped her. I mean, we're talking about Princess Leia, and of course it's a Star Wars podcast, so that's the main thing, but there was a woman who played her, and she was remarkable too. And I don't think any of you got to meet Carrie Fisher, but I did.
Oh, wow.
And I stood in line.
None of you got to meet her, but I did.
Well, yeah, see, that was my impression of Big growing up in California. But
from California.
But I had to stand in line for about 2 hours. And when I finally got up to her, she thanked me for standing in the line and for going through all that. She looked at the people were having her sign, you know, the various outfits, pictures of Leia. And anytime somebody gave her one in the metal bikini, she'd be like, I don't know who this is. I'll still sign it. But to me, that was just really amusing that she would have these snappy, amusing things to say. And maybe she had said it 20 times, but I didn't hear her say it 20 times. So I laughed.
No, I think I really want to read her memoir. Have you guys
the Star Wars one?
No.
Yeah, because she just recently wrote one about her experience on the Star Wars movies. And I'd love to read that too. Marsha, what's it called? It has the Princess Diarist, it's called.
Mm-hmm. But I mean, she's just.
And it's from the journals that she kept while shooting those movies.
Yeah, she just always came across as so smart and so. And, you know, I think the Princess Leia character had, I mean, she played that character. And so a lot of her was in that character. You know, I don't know that Princess Leia would sort of have the same impact if another actress had played her.
Yeah, it was interesting. Right after she died, I've been watching Westworld. So I got onto HBO to watch Westworld. I watch it on the little app that you can get on the Roku. And I got on there to watch it. And a new addition to HBO suddenly, that wasn't there like 3 days before when I'd watched the last episode, was Wishful Drinking.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Which is the one-woman show that Carrie Fisher did, which chronicles her very effed-up life that she's gone through. And she had a whole big segment about Star Wars where she even throws on a wig with the buns. And she talks about, you know, the fact that George Lucas owns her likeness. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, she's a Pez dispenser and she's a
shampoo bottle.
All these different things. And then she's like, oh, but at least they didn't make, you know, some kind of like life-sized sex toy of me. And of course, then you see behind her, they're lowering down this gigantic life-sized, you know, totally. It's like the cartoon version of Leia. Mm-hmm. So, you know, she's got the super, super thin waist and these gigantic boobs and et cetera. And then she's just like, oh, turns around and sees it. And then she's like, well, at least when somebody in the audience says, go F yourself, Carrie, I'm ready to go. But yeah, it was fun to watch, you know, because, she talks about that. She's like, you know, there's all sorts of tragedy in life, but once you get to the other side of it and you can look back at it and smile at it, then you know it's comedy. And let me, you know, she's like giving examples. Oh yeah, there was this and you know that was funny. Now, you know, she talks about how many pills she took or you know what happened to her and you know her marriage and divorce and how, you know, Paul Simon wrote songs about her. And And then she'll like read the lyrics off and they're not kind. Mm-hmm. And stuff. And she's just like, oh, well, let me try a different one, you know, again and again. And she goes through the whole screwed up story of her parents. And, you know, Debbie Reynolds and Eddie Fisher were married. And then
Fisher left Debbie Reynolds for a showgirl or something like that.
No, it was Elizabeth Taylor.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, she talks, she compares, you know, she's like, just to help you people compare, to understand the whole story, we'll say Debbie Reynolds and Eddie Fisher. Okay, so Brad Pitt
and
Jennifer Aniston. And then, so yeah, It was. I enjoyed it. I mean, I don't know if you guys have ever seen it. I think you can actually watch it on YouTube if you just search.
Yeah,
for
no,
it.
I would love to see that.
I would recommend it. It was fun. It was interesting, and it's just fun to see your humor. I feel sad because immediately upon her death, then sadly the first thing that I'm thinking is, oh no, what's going to happen in the next movie?
Yeah.
And I start thinking, and I've heard that she had a much bigger role in this one that's to come out in December. And now what is that going to mean for the one that's to come after that and et cetera? I mean, we saw her CG'd in to the last movie that just came out. Do we have that in our future?
I hope not. I hope they just rewrite it.
I think that's they did Lucasfilm, because they were getting together to plan out what they were going to do for episode 9, and there'll probably be changes to episode 8, but they did put a public statement out that they are not going to recreate Carrie Fisher as a CGI character. So,
well, that's probably good. I mean, I wouldn't be too upset if they did her the way I would have wished that they had done her in the last film, where they only show her back and, you know, we don't have to see the uncanny valley spread out before us. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I feel sad that that's the thought that I had. I feel like a bad person for that, because this is, you know, somebody, a real person that died, and I should not immediately think, oh no, my favorite movie's going to be ruined now. But I mean, I guess that's what I know her from. I did really like When Harry Met Sally as well, and she was...
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. That was one of my favorite... That's another of my favorite movies, and I thought she was just fantastic.
Yeah, she was great in that and very funny, and I really enjoyed, you know, the stuff that she did in that. I never saw Postcards from the Edge, which is basically based on her life with her mother, or read Postcards from the Edge, which is basically her life with her mother. Did I say that?
Did you see the Thirty Rock episode that she was in? Because that was really good.
I did not. Yeah. I didn't watch 30 Rock.
Her character was this writer, this comedy writer from, you know, years ago that the Tina Fey character just idolized. And so she brings her in to kind of work on her show. And she's a huge mess and just really, you know, wants to move in with her and just is like really difficult to deal with. And she did a great job with that.
Never meet your heroes.
Yep.
See, I feel the same way about episode 9. Maybe one day we'll find out what the plan was for Leia in that movie. I can't help but wonder, okay, what do you do? How do you change it? What is the best way for her to exit? Do you kill off Leia? Do you have just a line that Leia is off doing something? And I don't know what the answer is. I don't know what the best way to honor her is. But also, none of us know what the plan was going to be anyhow.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, the Leia character's death could have a huge impact on the story. And it seems like if you have a full movie to deal with aftermath and move beyond that in a way, and talk about being cold-blooded, but in a way it's like a good time for that, because they haven't started it yet, so they can work it in a great way. That sounds horrible.
Yeah, in a more organic way.
Yeah, like, did you, this is not even the same thing, but it kind of is. Did you see another Third Rock from the Sun, another rock show?
At first when you said 30 Rock, I thought that's what you were talking about.
Yeah. Well, Third Rock from the Sun is even older, but I love that show too. And Phil Hartman, who I also just adored, he played this character that came into the season finale of Third Rock from the Sun. And then he was killed before the next season, before the premiere. And so they had to deal with that because the season ended on this big cliffhanger, you know, what was going to happen. And he was key to that whole thing. And it wasn't handled great. I mean, it was totally different because he wasn't a regular character. He had just sort of appeared.
He wasn't intrinsic to the whole thing.
He was intrinsic to that plot line, but he wasn't intrinsic to the show itself. And so they just kind of had some excuse for why he wasn't around anymore and just moved on. And it wasn't done that well, but, you know, it maybe didn't need to be. But in this case, I think it would need to be, a lot of thought would need to be put into it to have it not sort of be like, well, we've got to do this, so let's just write something that explains it without it really fitting into the rest of the story.
Yeah, with a comedy show, you could do something fun with that, although I don't know if they would, if people would appreciate you.
His death was so horrifically tragic that,
right.
I mean, I think that's why they just sort of one-lined it and then moved on, because there was really...
you could do something like, oh, you just missed him. He just left, you know, at the start of a scene. And you keep, oh, yeah, everybody just keeps missing him. And then at the end, he's like, oh, he went back to Zlorban or whatever, you know, kind of a thing. But, yeah, I don't know that people would appreciate that. They might not think it's funny at all because of the real life implications to it. And, yeah, but that's a totally different thing than Star Wars. You can't just...
Right. No, you couldn't do that with Leia. I mean, she's such a huge... No, so here's my, like, embarrassing... Like, my thought was that if only instead of Han being killed, if Leia had been killed, like, because we still have Harrison Ford around. Like, he could still be in movies, but, you know, Carrie Fisher can't. But I'm glad that they did get... Like, you know, apparently she was able to film most of her scenes in episode 8. So I'm glad about that.
Yeah, well, all of that has been done for months and months. I'm just wondering if maybe if there's a lot of stuff, you cut some of that out and put it in the next one. You bump a couple of those scenes to episode 9. I don't know. None of us can know unless we've seen how the movie is put together and what Leia's role is, because if she's back at the base and our heroes are off on their adventure, then she's not as integral to what's going on. You know, just the same way as in Force Awakens, Leia was mostly a planner. She was somebody overseeing. She wasn't in there fighting, but maybe they want to take the advantage of the loss and really address it and say, okay, how does it affect Luke, who is the last Jedi? Mm-hmm. And how does it affect Rey, who, you know, may have gotten to know her and they may have bonded in some way in episode 8. I don't know.
How does it affect Kylo Ren, you know?
You're right.
That's his mother.
I hate Kylo Ren so much I'd forgotten that he is affected as well. But yeah. Maybe that sways him a little bit of just, oh, shoot. You know, at least I knew my mom was out there and my mom was safe. Although I guess the First Order was about to blow up that planet anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. I guess one way that they could still put it in, too, is just, you know, she could be in a ship that's coming to meet somebody and then the ship doesn't make it there and you could still have her in the show while not being in the show.
Yeah, the impression I got was that they were building her up to have, you know, some big moments in 9 as well. Of course, they'll have to cut that back. But, yeah, I just hope they find a way to do it where they honor her as a character and as an actress kind of thing. Not just, you know, have a quick little off-camera, oh, she died scene. But, I wouldn't know how you would do that. You know, in the latest Star Trek movie... I mean, even though the original Spock wasn't as big of a part of that franchise, they did do a little honor of his, that he died as a character after Leonard Nimoy died. And I thought they did a pretty good job of honoring that. But of course, like I said, he wasn't as big to the plot of those new movies as Leia was to these new Star Wars movies.
It is doable. I don't like any of these movies, but I did see what they did in the last Fast and the Furious with Paul Walker's death. Mm-hmm. They postponed the movie a year and they reshot some of the things. They used his brother as a sort of a stand-in for the character so that they could give Paul Walker's character a happy ending. And he got to ride off in the sunset at the end of the movie. And there's this song that's really moving and a tribute to him. So you could do something like that, or you could have Leia ride off in the sunset as well, and we just don't see her again, but she's going to have many more adventures that we don't experience. Or that we could lose Leia and have it be a big part of the story of how the other characters react to it. Mm-hmm. I mean, it could be done very well either way.
Yeah.
And they could get away with actually doing the whole CG Leia thing if they just made her like a blue hologram. Instead, because then you would forgive the weirdness and, oh yeah, it's not odd at all. Of course she's on the thing. So, I don't know. But, yeah, it's unfortunate. It's interesting because just a few years ago, Harrison Ford crashed a plane that he was flying by himself. But somehow he managed to make it out unscathed. He landed on like a golf course or something like that. And I had the same, I guess, thought, sadly, when that happened. I thought, oh no, but Star Wars, he's supposed to be in the Star Wars. And oh no, did he? But he didn't die, so there was not. But I was worried, I guess, even maybe that he just wouldn't be interested in participating anymore because of, like, similar to the Robert Downey Jr. getting injured on the set of Iron Man 3, and then he was just like, you know what, I don't think I want to be Iron Man anymore. I'm sure it's super popular, but I think I'm done. I'm just going to do the ones that I'm contracted for and then change my mind and decide to stick with it. But, yeah, I mean, Carrie is now the first of our three lead characters that has passed on. And she, I think she was the youngest of all of them, too, which is sad. But also, she is probably the one who had the hardest time with everything, it seems. You know, the fame and the life that she was part of took its toll, it seems, on her a lot more than it ever did on Harrison Ford or Mark Hamill. You don't hear a lot of stories of them having alcoholism problems or drug problems or any of that kind of stuff. So I guess it doesn't surprise me that she was the one that, whose heart went out. And yeah, can you think of a worse place to have a heart attack than on an airplane?
Yeah.
You know, there's nothing that can be done. You can't rush to the hospital. You gotta wait till you get there, no matter what.
Sometimes, though, there's nothing that can be done. And it sounds like that was the case with her. This guy I know who passed away over the summer, and young guy, well, not super young, but, you know, too young to die unexpectedly. I think he was 48 or so, just had a heart attack and died. And he was with people. They did CPR right away. They were able to call paramedics right away. But it was just such a big, and it was similar to her in that he was in the hospital for a while, sort of hooked up to things and the hope that he would be able to recover, and, you know, just couldn't. So, I mean, I guess, I don't know. I sort of feel like if that's going to happen, being on the plane is going to be terrible for everybody else. But for her, you know, I don't know that the outcome would have been any different.
Yeah, it was just so tragic. I mean, you know, her being so young and just not expecting something like that. You know, a lot of people, you know, when somebody that's older, like Ray Bradbury or somebody like that, you know, he was almost 92 or something like that when he died. And everybody's, oh, it's a sad day that this person died. I'm like, well, not really. I mean, they lived a good life. They've done a lot of things. And yeah, I'm sad for their family, but, you know, they've lived a full life. But with Carrie Fisher, I mean, that was just tragic.
Yeah, there's a lot more that she could have done.
And then with her mother dying, you know, the next day, I mean, that's just, that whole scene was just terrible.
Yeah.
If I can bring everything to a close, I'd like to find out what everybody's favorite Princess Leia moment in the Star Wars series is. And Marshall, you've said the least, so you can go first or you can defer and be last.
Yeah, I'll defer.
Okay, well, Big, you go first. What's your favorite Princess Leia moment?
You should have given me at least a moment to prepare for this. I'm thinking them through. I don't have one picked out.
Okay.
Well, for years and years, I'm like, oh, I just love it when this happens. So I'm thinking of the things that she does and trying to decide what the best one is. It's probably when she strangles Jabba, I guess. I think that's got to be my favorite part. She, you know, she's strong all the way through, but that's just kind of like the I don't know. She did so much, but it feels like that's her most action awesomeness moment. Because, I mean, seriously, like, how do you strangle Jabba to death? The guy's got to have a gigantic windpipe. Like, how hard did she have to pull on that chain to close it off so that he chokes to death? I don't know. But, yeah, that was cool.
Renee, do you have a moment that's coming to mind?
Yeah, I was lucky. I got a little bit to think because there are so many. But The one that I'm going to say is in Return of the Jedi, when she and Han are down on Endor and they're trying to blow up the shield and she gets shot and he's worried about her and he's hovering over her. And then, you know, behind them, some stormtroopers, you know, put your hands up, you know, we've got you. And she pulls the gun out so Han can see it. And he says, I love you. And she says, I know. And then shoots them. Like, that was just awesome for so many reasons. Like, just bringing that line back, which was so, you know, kind of like, I mean, that line was perfect in Empire Strikes Back, but from her perspective, maybe wasn't the answer that she wanted. So to, you know, come back to that and in such a great way. I loved that.
It is great. It is a fun reversal. And because I saw Jedi first, obviously I wouldn't have gotten that. But yeah.
You did eventually.
But I did eventually. And mine is from Empire Strikes Back. And it's the scene in the Falcon where who knows what she's doing. She's fixing something and Han comes in to put the moves on her. And just that scene where he starts rubbing her hand and she says, don't do that. And he says, do what? And she says, my hands are dirty. My hands are dirty too. What's the problem? He gets closer and closer to her and she never stops talking. You like me because I'm a scoundrel. There aren't enough scoundrels in your life. I happen to like nice men. I'm nice men. No, you're not. And he's like a quarter of an inch away from her mouth and she's still talking. I just, oh gosh, I love that moment. And it may not be Leia's greatest moment, but it's just such a fun first kiss kind of scene. I would love to have been on the set and the size of the grin I would have every time they did a take on that. And it's just, yeah, there is obviously a lot of chemistry between those two. Mm-hmm. And she's just trying to push him away as hard as she can. But at the same time,
she does, I mean,
she's
like
into
him.
Han, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. She's a business first kind of person and he's trying to crack that veneer. I don't know. I guess maybe that's something we can relate to. I just love that scene. And then 3PO ruins it. Oh, gosh. He ruins it. And Han says, thank you. Thank you very much. And 3PO is like, you're perfectly welcome, sir.
And she's totally relieved, too. So you see her reaction after that. It's just like, you know, because she had not been able to be her normal business-only self.
And that leaves Marshall Latham.
That leaves me. I don't know. It's hard to pick. I guess a runner-up would probably be Empire Strikes Back when Lando gets set free and then you know, Chewie grabs him by the throat and she's talking to him and you know, just isn't taking any crap from him anymore. I really like that part. But I guess a part that it's really good up until the very end, but in Return of the Jedi, when she's out on it, they've already made peace with the Ewoks and everything, and her and Luke are out talking, and he tells her, you know, asks her about what she remembers about her mom, and they're talking about that, and then he tells her that Darth Vader is his father, and not only that, but her father as well, and their brother and sister, and, you know, he leaves, and then, you know, Han comes out and he doesn't know anything what's going on. And, you know, he's jealous of Luke that something's going on there. And it's, you know, I could see his frustration and have her emotions going. And the part I don't like is when she goes, hold me. That's so lame. But up until that point, that scene, I really like.
Yeah,
that.
But it's not until Han backs down and apologizes that she says, hold me.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like he's earned something there. That's such a great example of the growth of the Han Solo character, where, you know, his immediate reaction is, and then he puts that away and he apologizes,
yeah,
which the Han in Star Wars would never have done.
No.
And then she says, hold me, and I don't know. I love that scene, and I love her reaction when Luke says, he's my father. There's that kind of look of horror that goes over her face, because she knows better than anyone, better than Luke, better than Han, better than us, what kind of monster Darth Vader is. And then, you know, there's more. And but she, yeah, I think she takes the news that Vader is Luke's father way worse than she takes the news that he is her father.
Yeah, yeah.
I gotta wonder what her upbringing was, because she didn't know that Bail Organa was her adoptive father? Would she always just under the assumption that Bail was her dad and her mother was not her mother?
Yeah, I mean, that's interesting.
I don't know. Maybe one day we will know
who she thought her father was.
She has no memories of her real mother?
No, Luke has no memories of his
mother.
Doesn't
she say she
Leia
only
does.
Remembers a little bit of her mother? It's
well,
she
that's
died
one
when
where
she was very young.
Inconsistent with the prequels, because
very much so.
Yeah, she supposedly knew her mother.
Right, the prequels effed it all up, but
yeah.
From that line, do we gather that to be that we're talking about the Queen of Alderaan, or are we talking about...
No, because Luke says, what do you remember about your mother, your real mother?
Okay.
So she had to have known that the Queen
was... She
was
adopted.
Was, you know,
yeah.
But she may not have known that Bail Organa was not her father. I would like to read that story and find out. I would like to write that story and find out.
Yeah, because that could be very interesting, you know? How did that all come to be that, you know, if she thought that he was her real father, did the adoptive mother come into the picture after the biological mother died, or were they both around at the same time? Or there's lots that could be done with all that.
Renee, I hate to rub it in, but you just spoke as though the prequels didn't exist. So I have corrupted you, fool.
Good.
My opinion was never that the prequels were great or even as good as the original trilogy. My opinion was that they weren't the big pile of junk that everybody, you know, the true Star Wars fans always talk about them as.
Yeah, everybody's wrong once in a while.
Yeah. Well, you know, we don't need to rehash all that. Big wasn't around for that conversation, but it's just growing up with Star Wars and then having my children grow up with the prequels, it changes sort of how you view it. So it was interesting. Because especially my son, loved it. And I think, and we talked about this with our Force Awakens podcast, that my son was like not impressed. Like of all the whole family, when we went to see The Force Awakens and he was 14 at the time, he did not like Force Awakens at all. He thought it was really sort of derivative, which I think is how a lot of people who grew up with Star Wars viewed the prequels. So it's kind of like what you know, and then you see kind of the takeoff of it or the spin-off of it. You know, to really like that is, it doesn't always happen. In fact, I think a lot of times it's hard to live up to what we as children loved. As an adult, as cynical adults or teenagers, you know, it's just never going to be as good.
I'm still yet to see something that can live up to Condor Man, so I totally know what you're talking about.
Well, it's probably need to wrap things up, but I did want to say one of my biggest regrets is I did have the opportunity, like Rish, to stand in line and to meet Carrie Fisher. She was at the one and only Comic-Con that I've been to. It was in Portland. And I just remember, you know, saying, oh, $80, just had to have somebody sign a picture. And then you have to buy the picture. And I guess I was a cheapskate or whatever. But I didn't take that opportunity. And I wish I had. I wish I had had that moment with Carrie Fisher, just to interact with her as a real person rather than just as this character. But I didn't take it, so that's my fault.
Yeah, I stood in line once for a Carrie Fisher panel and didn't get in. So, yeah, I missed out on her too. So there you go.
Well, now we're all sad.
We're sad.
But that's good. It's a good sad.
We were sad to start with. This hasn't changed anything.
It's just a bummer. It's just a terrible ending to a not that great year. So,
I agree completely. But one thing that was remarkable was how many people expressed this love for Carrie Fisher. I mean, just, people just came out of the woodwork with tweets and with tributes. And I saw People Magazine has a Carrie Fisher special that's on the shelves right now. And it's Introduction by Mark Hamill. And I was like, ooh, do I want to spend $8.50 to read this? And I kind of do.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, Hamill was, you know, he's a really entertaining speaker as well. If you get a chance to see him talk, it's just a blast. And to hear him talk about, you know, it's like, well, kid, I've got some good news and some bad news. And it's like, the good news is there's one hot chick in the universe and you know her. The bad news is she's your sister. And he made no bones about it that during the shooting of Star Wars, he had this huge crush on Carrie Fisher. Mm-hmm. And as a little boy reading that, I was just like, wow, cool. Like, that's romance, or I don't know. But yeah. That sort of thing makes me want to read his tribute of the side of her that he would have seen that none of us saw. And plus, you know, he got to shoot that movie with her. I'm assuming Luke and Leia have scenes together.
Yeah.
I don't know. We'll find out in a month and a half, whenever it comes out.
Well, it's been really good to talk about her, because it's sad, but nice that we can still... We have something to look forward to with the next movie, because we get to see her a little more.
And she lived an important life and did a lot of things and, you know, has a body of work that we can look back at and celebrate, mm-hmm. you know? So she made a difference for a lot of people. And, you know, that's, I think, as much as you can ask for in your life for most people, so...
Yeah, we didn't even talk too much about, yeah, her honest conversations about mental health
yeah.
and dealing with all that kind of stuff. But yeah, she definitely is known for that. So, well, I guess maybe to brighten us on the way out, kind of like Rish, maybe I'll have us each go around and give our favorite Princess Leia quote from the movies. Mine would be, "Into the garbage chute, flyboy." It doesn't have to be your favorite. It can just be a quote that you remember.
Yeah, I think I already said mine, which is, "Would somebody get this walking yeah. carpet out of my way?" Which I just loved, because, you know, here they are on the Death Star, and Chewie's a pretty imposing figure, and she was not having it. So,
mine would be, "I'd just as soon kiss a Wookiee."
I can arrange that.
I don't know if I could do the whole quote.
Let's see if you can. Why you?
I can get scruffy looking, nerf herder.
Oh, yeah.
But
yeah, yeah, yeah,
I can't remember the whole litany that she spits
you,
out.
It's like you stuck up.
Half-witted.
Half-witted, scruffy looking yeah. nerf herder. Is that the whole thing? Or is
it is. That's it.
Who's scruffy looking?
Or... aren't you a little short for a stormtrooper?
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you once again, all four of you, three of us, four, I don't know, like there, however many of your people are on this Skype call. I appreciate you guys making the sacrifice to do it again. And yeah, just let me know next time you want to do it. It's great to have more people than just me and Marshall, although Marshall is a good cuddler.
I don't have a response to that.
All right.
No, very fun. I love talking about it.
Well, may the forces of others be with you.
Forces in me.
The Delusions of Grandeur podcast is produced under Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license. Please don't change it or sell it, but please share it with whomever you would like.
Hi, I'm Mrs. Han Solo, and I'm an alcoholic. I'm an alcoholic because George Lucas ruined my life. And I mean that in the nicest possible way. 57 years ago, I did his little Star Wars film, a cult film that then went on to redefine what they laughingly refer to as the face of cinema. And now, 65 years later, people are still asking me if I knew it was going to be that big of a hit. Yes, I knew. We all knew. The only one who didn't know was George. We kept it from him because we wanted to see what his face looked like when it changed expression. George is a sadist. But like any abused child wearing a metal bikini changed to a giant slug about to die, I keep coming back for more. Only a man like George could bring us whole new worlds, populated by vivid, extraordinary characters, and providing Mark and Harrison and myself with enough fan mail and even a small, merry band of stalkers. It's lovely, keeping us entertained for the rest of our unnatural lives. George, the fact that you made me into a little doll that my first husband could stick pins into, a shampoo bottle where people could twist my head off and pour liquid out of my neck, lather up with Leia and you'll feel like a princess yourself. And yes, the little Pez dispenser so that my daughter Billy could pull my head back and pull a wafer out of my neck every time she doesn't want to do her homework. I suppose I don't mind. And though amongst your many possessions you have owned my likeness, lo, all these years, so that every time I look in the mirror, I have to send you a check for a couple of bucks. To mention, you had the unmitigated gall to let that chick, the new girl who plays my mother, Queen Amadillo, or whatever her name is, she wears a new hairstyle and outfit practically every time she walks through a door. I mean, I bet she even got to wear a bra, even though you told me I couldn't because there was no underwear in space. Slightly bitter, because you, my formerly silent friend, are an extraordinary talent, and let's face it, an artist, the like of which is seen perhaps once in a generation who helps define that generation, and who deserves every award I now spend the latter half of my Leia-laden life helping to hurl your way. Conclusion, Your Honor. I hope I slept with you to get the job, because if not, who the hell was that guy?